Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 255.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, where we have one mission, that is to help you achieve jazz piano freedom so that you can express your true inner soul and emotions instead of having to copy what others have shown you. Now, we do this by providing structured and organized jazz piano education on specific jazz piano tools that you can then take and use over any tune so that you have complete jazz piano freedom. All right, welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 255. My name is Brendan Lowe, creator and founder of Jazz Piano School. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for supporting jazz piano education and Jazz Piano School. This is a fun episode. I decided to continue with the theme of bebop, because it's such an integral part of jazz. And again, any modern pianist that you enjoy, McCoy, Herbie, Chick, whoever it is, right? Kenny Kirkland, guaranteed, and I've heard it. I mean, those guys can crush bebop. They can crush it. Like, it was their, you know, it was their main style. And I see so many students that want to jump into those styles. They want to jump into the modern stuff, the pentatonics, the hexatonics, the modal stuff, the fourths, right? But, again, bebop is the foundation of jazz. It's one of the integral moments and eras of jazz, and from that came these amazing modern pianists that adapted the bebop language, right? And so to leave bebop out of your repertoire, to leave it out of your skill set and abilities, again, is doing a disservice to jazz. It's not helping you in any way. And again, you're not going to be as a good a pianist, and you're not going to be able to learn how to actually play in that more modern style without learning this as well. Or you won't be as proficient in the modern style without learning these things, because a lot of stuff translates into that. So it's really, really important to study bebop, to learn your bebop approaches or enclosures, whatever terminology you want to use, to practice them through the keys over your minor seven chords, your dominant seven chords, your major seven chords, you know, your minor 2-5-1s, and learn how to approach the chord tones. Now, again, if you've heard my lessons, chord tones are the anchors to harmony. Chord tones are the anchors to harmony. And they're very, very important in a harmonic sense, right? And it's so funny. I talk to people about improv all the time, very seasoned educators. And they say, you know, Brendan, I'm trying to teach improv to my students, and these students range. You know, I do a lot of consulting. I don't know if you guys knew this, but I help other aid teachers just because of my philosophy. They stumbled onto Jazz Piano School. They really like my systematic approach. You know, it's very regimented. It's very organized. It's very structured. And, you know, everything leads into each other. So I do consulting for teachers, essentially, and they'll ask me questions, or they'll talk to me about Jazz Piano School, my curriculum, so on and so forth. But anyway, I always say the same thing about improv, because everyone's trying to teach improv. All jazz educators are trying to teach improv. And it comes back to the main thing, and that I went through as well. And most jazz educators don't have the language. And again, I don't want to group educators together, but throughout history and just the evolution of jazz education and improvisation taught in jazz, most of the time, the majority of the time, the language used to explain improv comes across as vague to students. It comes across as nebulous, mysterious, gray, without definition, without specificity, right? And students, the majority of the time, are very confused. They're confused, and I was confused, and I just didn't get it. I didn't understand how to approach improv. I didn't get the structure. I wanted a systematic path to follow. I wanted a step-by-step process. But all I got from a lot of my educators was listen more, right? Swing harder. You got to just swing harder and listen more. You got to transcribe. You got to take more space, leave more space, swing harder, right? And I just kept hearing these things over and over and over, transcribe. You know, listen to Oscar, listen to Herbie, listen to Chick, steal their lines, transcribe their lines, use them in your solos, right? That's usually what you hear. Or it's kind of some variation of like, practice these 2-5-1s in all keys. And most students actually come to Jazz Piano School. A lot of students, I get email requests, hey, do you have like 2-5-1 licks I can practice in all keys? Yeah, we do, but that's not like the key to jazz improvisation. Neither is transcription. It is a big part of jazz, I'd say, and it has a place, obviously. I would never say it does not have a place. Transcription is very, very important, but it's not like the key thing that's going to get you to where you want to go. Although at a certain place, when you've developed a foundation, when you have the knowledge, when you have these pillars set up for your improvisation, yes, absolutely, it will light speed your improvisation progress because you understand what these previous jazz giants are doing. You understand the building blocks of their language, what Charlie Parker's doing, what Coltrane is doing, what Oscar's doing, what Bud Powell's doing, what Wynton Kelly's doing. You understand why they're doing the things they're doing, right? Because you have knowledge about it. And from that, guess what? It makes it that much easier to look at something and understand it and then integrate it quickly into your own playing and make exponential progress in a short amount of time. But just by transcribing alone is not going to do that. I mean, I did that for years. Trust me, I did it. I did it. This is one of the reasons I started Jazz Piano School, because I did this process. I followed this process for 10 plus years and it just didn't work for me. Now, there's going to be people out there that don't believe me. There's going to be people out there that listen to the words coming out of my mouth and they still do it anyway, because so much of jazz education is built around this, right? But I'm going to get off my soapbox here, because again, what this episode is about is going to show you how to turn the exercise, the knowledge of bebop approaches and enclosures and everything I've kind of been teaching you in the past couple episodes. And even in the last episode, I started to get into it a little bit more, like how to connect the bebop approaches through harmonies, right? And like I said earlier, your chord tones are going to be the most important things, because they're the connection to the harmonies. Like when you play a chord, the chord tones are the connection. I'm taking a long time to explain this ahead of the episode because I don't want to talk forever in the episode, but it's really, really crucial mentally to understand this knowledge. Like the understanding of knowledge even outside of the piano is very crucial. And hopefully a lot of you listen to my podcast and listen to these up front. I should say, you can go to YouTube, by the way, and see the edited version of this, because on YouTube, everyone complains if you talk in the beginning, right? Too much talk. Stop talking. It's really funny. In the beginning, it bothered me. I was like, why don't these people want to learn this stuff? And then I just kind of laugh at it, because everyone, I do it too. You know, when I'm looking for a video to learn something, I usually start skipping ahead rather quickly. But it's true. It's true. We want to get to the main meat and potatoes of what we're trying to learn, right? Anyway, that's why I do this podcast. So for the people that are driving in their car, they can listen to this, they can learn, and it's very knowledgeable. But again, listening to this is very helpful for you, especially when I'm getting into things like this, these mental concepts, because so much of jazz, so much of performance, so much of anything in life is about mental health. It's about mental capacity, stamina, endurance, understanding, knowledge, control, calm, tranquility, right, of your mind. And it's not just about the execution of, you know, whatever you're trying to do. Preparation comes way before that, right? Practicing is just one little piece of the puzzle. And so much comes even outside of that. All right, anyway, so I'm digressing. But from chord tones, we get into the connecting glue notes, which are in between the chord tones. And then from there, we get into bebop approaches and closures. And then we get into connection of bebop approaches and closures. And I'm going to skip a lot of stuff. I'm kind of going over my improvisation specialty course lineup or list of steps. But eventually, you want to know how to connect the bebop approaches and enclosures to actually make music. And a lot of that comes through musicality elements, what I call musicality elements. And this is the process. These are elements that actually create a process of making music. Because a lot of times we will learn something and play it on the piano and then have no real concept of how to turn that into what we hear on the albums, the sound that we're trying to emulate, right? And what's happening is that we're not using these musicality elements that I'm going to talk about today. Some of them include space. Some of them include trills, textures, slides, right? I'm not going to get too much into that because I do want to show you just how to make certain lines, but I'm going to go into an advanced portion of that and different rhythmic contrast. All these things are musicality elements, right? They create musical concepts that are essentially simple concepts, but it's the art of making music. Loud, soft, thick, thin. All these mental conceptual concepts actually make music, right? If a student comes up and plays two notes, maybe they go G, D, right? And they've never played piano before, like a child, let's say, that you tell them to play two notes. Guaranteed, I can make like more music out of those two notes in hundreds of different ways than that person can. And that's because I understand that I can use all these different types of concepts, attacks, approaches, right? Staccato, legato, soft, all these different things. That's what creates music. It's not really actually about the notes, although obviously the notes play an important part in the role, but you need to add these musicality concepts into simple concepts in order to derive, right, amazing jazz sounds from these things. Because again, a lot of the time, the allure, the mystery around what is being played on the albums when the curtain's revealed, okay, it's not that difficult. It's not that hard to learn. It's not that difficult to learn. But the reason most students can't sound like that is because of these elements. They're not playing with the same swing feel. They're not playing with the same textures. They're not improvising with the same amount of attack, same amount of approach, same amount of legato, same amount of staccato, same amount of slides, trills, rhythmic contrast, right? Variation in the piano, variation in their lines, okay? So I had to get that off my chest before I dive into this because there's so many more layers to this than meets the eye on the surface level, right? It really goes deep on how to take simple approaches, like concepts, like bebop approaches, and turn them into music, which is what this whole episode's, about, all right? So, with that being said, just a little house cleaning. Again, we are working on the improvisation course, and that's going to be a specialty course, which is going to be around a lot of this. It's going to include my improvisation sequential step-by-step system, which again, I use for consulting. I teach masterclasses on, I teach other educators on, and again, works extremely well to learning improvisation, progressing and making actual progress in improv in a quick amount of time, right? Without kind of beating around the bush or feeling stuck. And it's going to be really, really awesome. I'm super excited for it. Obviously, we're going to cover lots of styles, lots of pianists, lots of previous jazz giants, their styles, how they affected the jazz era, the jazz sound of improvisation, because so many, you know, great pianists had such an amazing role in the forward momentum of jazz improvisation language. They essentially took artists from the past and then pushed things forward. You know, think of Monk, for example. I mean, his style is just like, you know exactly who is playing and improvising when you hear Monk on the piano on an album. That's because he developed his own style. And since then, it's propelled jazz forward, which is amazing, right? And all these styles need to be touched upon because there's things you can learn from all of them. All right. So with that being said, let's dive right into this episode. Here we go. So the first thing I want to talk about here is we're going to just be improvising over a 2-5-1. Now, in last week's episode, I was teaching you essentially how to just use scalar motion and bebop approaches. To connect chord tones, right? In more of a scalar fashion. With eighth notes, with not many skips, not many jumps, not much space, not much musicality. Obviously, this episode's a little different. We're taking it a step further. But I just want to touch upon that. So in the middle of your bebop line, not much is happening, although as I said before, you can add bebop approaches into the middle of your line. But the important key moments to really think about and prepare for in your head are the moments where you get to beats and of three and four, because at those points, you're going to need to make a decision about what chord tone you're going to land on when the chord changes and how to get there, right? So again, if I were to start my line up here, right? When I started here, my goal was to target this chord tone. And I did that from a chord scale above to a half step above to the third, right? Now, it's not until I landed on this B flat. All I was doing in between that bebop approach and this B flat was just coming down the scale, just coming down the glue notes and chord tones of the diatonic key that I'm in, which is B flat. I'm just coming down a B flat major scale. But in my head, when I get around beat the and of three or beat four, my brain is like, flag, I need to start thinking about how I'm going to get to my next chord. How am I going to get to my next chord tone through the use of some sort of bebop approach? Most likely, right? So one and two and three and, right? So now I'm on the and of three. So I'm close to this A here and I'm coming down in a downward fashion. So my brain is like, well, how can I get to this A, right? One and two and three and. Well, I know and I've practiced the use of all the bebop approach notes and enclosures that I taught you in the previous episodes. I know from the and of three, I can go four and one. This bebop approach, this double chromatic bebop approach, can take up two eighth notes, meaning it can take up beat four in the and of four. So from here, I can go, oh, cool. I can go to the chord scale below, half step below, and into that A to land on my A. Right? So that's the one I'm using. And again, this takes time. This takes time and slow, repetitive practice to train your brain to click into preparation mode and thinking mode when you get to these later beats, right? The end of three, the beat four, the downbeat of four, to start to calculate and understand. Now, eventually, obviously, you're not thinking, you're not calculating. This stuff starts to come out naturally, but this is the process. Now, from here, I'm kind of worry-free. I've just hit the downbeat of one, and I'm worry-free. So I'm just going to go down my bebop scale, one and two and three, and I'm still worry-free, and four. Now I'm like, okay, I'm on beat four, right? I have two chord tones close to me that are going to be in the next chord, my D and my B flat, right? That's going to be from the one chord, the B flat major seven. So from beat four, how can I approach the D or the B flat? Which one do I want to choose? Let's say I do the D. I can go four and one. I only need one note to connect, and I can use the half step below bebop approach to connect that. Right? I could use the chromatic half step above approach to go into my B flat, four and one. That's not really a common approach to go into that, but it does work. It does work. I could also skip, put a skip in, and use the half step below. And that approach would be essentially chord scale above to half step below to chord tone, right? So we have this now. Right? That's our first option, or this. Right? And so these choices are calculated on the spot instantaneously as I'm playing, as I'm creating bebop lines, and with any great giant, Bud Powell, right? Chick is more modern style, obviously, but again, these players did learn all the bebop language guaranteed, but Wynton Kelly, Bud Powell, you know, all these amazing, Red Garland, all these amazing bebop players were doing this instantly because they've practiced this. They've practiced the ins and outs and the ways they can get to these certain chord tones, right? Now, let's take this a step further because that's exactly what this episode's about. How do you create music from this? Because we're really just kind of practicing now, right? How do we go into that spontaneous fashion? So we want to start to leave space, Okay, we want to start to add musicality elements. Now, what do I mean by that? Musicality elements are going to be dynamics, repetition, motifs. We're getting into some advanced things now, right? Some skips, some jumps, maybe some delayed resolutions. So instead of just continuous eighth notes with bebop approaches, right? We're going to add some space. We're going to maybe add some slides. But the key elements here, our brain is still trying to focus on how to resolve the chord tones in most situations, right? In most situations. So I'm still targeting chord tones, even if I do this, right? So this is starting to sound more like a solo now. It's starting to sound more like music. And all I've done here was I pivoted back and forth on these two notes. But at the same time, my thought process was, well, what's the next chord? It's an F7 chord. What are the chord tones in the F7 chord? And again, all this is happening instantly because I know it like the back of my hand, like riding a bike. And then I said, okay, well, let's go to the A. I'm going to slide into the A from a half step above. I could have gone half step below. I could have gone chord scale above to half step below. Into that A. I could have used another bebop approach. Right? Now, obviously, there's space in between. They're not connected by eighth note bebop lines. And that's okay. It's just a different texture, right? Again, like the line we used before, I could have gone. You don't always want just continuous eighth note lines, though, because we were trying to make music. Now, again, I could have changed this up. I could have gone. Or I could have gone. So here, what's happening, right? I have two distinct textures that are happening. Again, I call these musicality elements because they elevate an exercise, a theoretical concept into actual jazz music, stuff you hear on albums, stuff you want to play, right? But when you start to practice exercises, it never comes out like that. That's because you don't have musical elements in your playing. So I do a little slide here. I do a little slide. That's a musicality element, a texture, right? And then I go into an octave. That's another texture as well, a dyad, right? So I'm going from the 9 to the 11, too. And again, the notes don't really matter. I could do it in a different way. It doesn't really matter what notes you're using. It's just about the textures, the slide. Right? Just like this. And then again, I use the bebop approach to get into the A. Now I have some different rhythms going on as well. Obviously, rhythmic contrast, right? 1 and 2 and 3. And then 4 and 1. So I'm combining different things. I'm combining space, elements, textures, to create music. Now, that's a very kind of like different situation than what I just came from. So let me add some more connection into it so you can hear a more, a smaller elevated distinction between our improv. So again, before we were just doing all scalar improv eighth notes. So maybe I just do this. So I added a musical element of space. I didn't need to keep going. I could do a little slide, and then again, my mind is saying, okay, I need to resolve into some sort of chord tone. So again, I use the chords half step above to go into that D. Okay? Now from here, again, we can work with a lot of different elements, like pauses. Delayed resolutions, right? So maybe again, I'm hitting this F or the 11 on downbeat of 1 and then moving into the 3rd instead of landing right on the 3rd. Like that wasn't the best example, but again, a lot of people hit the sharp 11 to use like a delayed resolution. They might do that. And then resolve it. Or right? So that's an example of a delayed resolution where you're landing on a note that's not a chord tone, but you're resolving it just a little bit later. Right? Or maybe that. And again, you can do that to get yourself out of sticky situations, meaning if you hit a non-chord tone by accident or something like that, or if even if you're advanced enough to do it on purpose, which professionals do, you know, I do, right? We land on those chord tone or the non-chord tones. You can always get yourself out of it by just resolving to the next chord tone to the closest note. So if you land on a 4 by accident, you know, over an F7 chord, just play it again and resolve to the 3rd. Or go, right? Maybe you hit a note outside the chord. Just resolve it. Just resolve it. See how you can get yourself out of these situations? Like if you make a mistake, maybe you hit an E natural over a minor chord, right? Maybe you go, just resolve it to the next chord tone, right? If you hit that note, or just, right? Resolve it to the next chord tone. Anyway, so we're adding these musicality elements in, and it starts to bring together music and the bebop approaches and concepts we've been working on, right? Okay, I haven't used any like triplets or 16th note trills yet. I'm still keeping it pretty simple. Let's add a 6th to get us back to our 2 chord. There's a bebop approach. Maybe I'll do another one. Half step below, chord scale above. Half step below, chord scale above. I used the same one, but just over a different chord tone. So this was going to the 3. Now I'm thinking, how am I going to resolve this? And again, I chose to go down to the A, but I created music out of it by just adding a little pivot. Right? So I'm going up to the C, and then I'm thinking about my G minor, so I'm going, now my G minor in my head is coming up, my flags are going off, I'm close to beat 1, right? So I'm going to use a half step above to a half step below approach to get to the 3rd of my G minor chord. So and 1, and 2, and 3, and 4, and 1. So again, I was around that 3 and 4 beat range and my radar started going off. I need to approach a new next note somehow. My closest chord tone is this B flat. How do I get there? So I used an approach that I've practiced over and over and over again, which hopefully you guys have done as well. And it comes out naturally now to lead me into those next chord tones while I'm making music. Now let's talk about this little line here that I continue on to go with. Once I've passed the point of the resolution to the chord tone, that's a very important moment, right? Again, as I've said and stated before, what you do after that can be simple, can be free, can be more diatonic because tension is built into the bebop approaches. So when you're using bebop approaches, you're creating a lot of tension already. You don't need more tension. Again, if I were to stack bebop approach on top of bebop approach on top of bebop approach, it's going to be very like, you know, like tension, release, tension, release. You want to just leave some space. That's what space is great for. It gives people time to relax. So here, so many bebop lines have to deal with arpeggiation of the chord. So many. I can't tell you how many. So 3, I'm just going up the scale, just a scalar motion to the 5, and then arpeggiation to the 9, and then falling down into the 1. There's no bebop approaches, it's all diatonic, it just consists of arpeggiation of the chord with a little scalar motion to get me, to connect me from the 3 to the 5. I use the same motif in the next instance or of my bebop line that I just used. So I'm using a half step below approach to get into the seven. Right? And I use the same motif, the same rhythmic motif, right? And that starts to add thematic development of our improvisation. It starts to take the listener, take us even, on a journey, because we're using little snippets of motifs, repetitive things we've played before. Right? So, skip, just a walking down the scale, a little pivot, half step motion. Then I'm resolving to my one on my chord tone. It doesn't always have to be a bebop approach, although I could use that. Let's say you hit this E natural by accident. Oops, I hit an E natural over an F dominant 7 chord. That's okay. Just resolve it with the use of a bebop approach. Remember, this is a half step. You can turn this into a bebop approach. So I went half step below, chord scale below, or excuse me, chord scale above, half step below, into the one. So I turned the mistake into a bebop line. And I would play that on purpose. I mean, that's a line I would play on purpose, right? To kind of like fool the listener. And you'll hear that all the time. But it's also a very great tool that you can use to get yourself out of situations. So we have this. Again, you can go. That's another bebop approach I've shown you. Right? And again, if you want more bebop language in your lines, by all means, continue to use bebop approaches connected to bebop approaches. So you could go. But again, with that comes at the addition of musicality, right? And balance and contrast. And this is how we start to create music out of all of the exercises I've previously given you. So let's keep going just a little bit, but I think you're getting the point. I'll just continue slowly to demonstrate and show you the addition of elements, all these elements. That's taking it a step further, is elevation of any sort of ornamental trills to your bebop approach. This is going to be another step, another musicality element. Again, all these little ornaments are like flashy, I don't like to call them tricks, because I call them musicality elements. They elevate your sound to sound more professional. So it's like you're here, and once you start adding these in, the professionality of your sound starts to increase, because that little thing right there, that's an elegant ornament that ornaments the sound of the bebop approach. A little slide at the end is a nice little musicality texture to add in. And again, you can already see that sounds better and it sounds more professional than what I was doing before. It sounds less bland. It's about the texture, right? Again, an ornamental trill around that bebop approach. Maybe I end my line with the same motif that I used over the G minor. Maybe I end my line over the. You see how we start to piece together motivic development around our bebop approaches combined with, again, this is a lot. This is advanced stuff. But conceptually, the way to practice this is get to a point where you can create lines with the use of your bebop approaches in a slow manner. start to elevate it. We'll start to add in some more textures. Now that texture right there, I haven't used yet. It was an arpeggiation with a triplet. Again, a triplet that just goes up the chord tones. This is a musicality element as well. It's called rhythmic contrast. Your ear automatically perks up because I've been doing is playing eighth notes and quarter notes up until this point. And then you hear that triplet, you're like, oh, that's a different rhythm. And again, another element that adds professionality, makes you sound more like a pro, more like the albums because of the rhythmic contrast. I could add a little slide at the end. Right? A little slide there. So I'll go slowly and I'll exaggerate the elements now. Right, all these resolutions. Sorry. Now here, let me explain this, is that again, back in the bebop days, a lot of bebop artists, Dizzy, Charlie, Bud Powell, they weren't really thinking about the minor chord chord tones as much. They would really just think about the dominant chord because the minor chord was leading into the dominant. So they would start their bebop line or the bebop scale or approaches over the chord tones to an F7, even though the chord was an C minor 7. And because it's going to lead into the F7, it creates a nice, fluid, smooth transition into that F7 because you're already playing F7. That's why I landed on this chord tone of the F7. I was going to come down my bebop scale, which leads me into this F7. Right? So you're already, your ear's kind of like hearing the next chord before it already happens. That was the theoretical concept behind that. All right. Delayed approaches, moving into the next chord, moving into the next chord, right? Now you can start to really kind of elevate the sound. Again, the musicality of elements to elevate your sound into music is just one way to increase your professional improvisation sound. Right now in this episode, all I'm teaching you is how to create music out of the bebop approaches that we've used. So I'm really not doing much. I'm combining musicality elements with the bebop approaches, with the musicality elements I'm using are space, motifs, repetitive rhythms, repetitive melodic rhythms. Again, with some bebop approaches. Again, with some slides. But there's other categories that you can use to elevate your playing, just to demonstrate how this starts to get really advanced. To sound like a pro is that you start integrating and layering other types of textures. And what I mean by textures is other types of musicality elements, but other elements that layers, that kind of layer on top of the musicality elements you're already adding. Now, improvisation tools or concepts is a huge category because I can start to use the blues scale. That's just a conceptual improvisation tool. I can use an altered scale, right? Just another conceptual tool. I can use the major six blues scale, the full major blues scale. Okay, I can start to add reharms in my left hand. I might make the G minor, maybe I make that a dominant chord. Now, up until now, you haven't really been able to see my left hand. It hasn't mattered. But if I change the tonality of the harmony through reharms and add a blues scale, it's going to completely affect the whole sound and, again, elevate the sound of what I'm doing here to the next level, right? Using this little blues note up here. That's all blues. More blues. Again, I'm just using motivic development here, just a repetitive pattern. I'm not even using any bebop approaches, just slides and bebop in blues scale. There's my first bebop approach. Right? So, chord scale above, half step above, half step below. So now I can start to add in some reharms. Again, with my left hand, I'll maybe instead of playing the G minor 7, I'll play a G dominant 7. With the addition of the reharm, this gives me more opportunity in my right hand to add different types of improvisational tools, because now I've reharmed to my dominant chord. I can start to use my half whole scale, my altered scale, right? My blues scale over top of this is going to sound excellent. So because we've changed one thing, it opens up more doors, more chances for us to elevate our sound to sound more professional. See how the sound starts to change? It starts to evolve. It starts to sound open, like it's like you're opening a new door, right? It's really cool. And if I switch, now right now I'm using my left hand. Again, the left hand is one of the layers too in my improvisation specialty course that's coming out very soon. If we start to add a new element in my left hand, but right now all I'm doing is playing root position chords. Now clearly that's a beginning way to go about things. So if we elevate my left hand now, like raise the bar on that, and this is going to change the sound as well, right? So if I play some rootless voicings now, again, I'll play some bass notes as well. Right, already the sound is different. Thank you. again. And then I can continuously elevate, adding in other layers, right? More advanced concept, more advanced layers, more musicality. What was that? That sounds completely different. I used a reharm. That's the first step. I went to a 10th in my left hand. So I'm creating a dominant 7 now over my minor 7. It's a secondary dominant reharm, right? And I was using some blues in my right hand. Dominant. Sus. Maybe a reharm here. So I went to my 3 instead of my 1. Now, clearly, I don't need to keep demonstrating, right? But this is how you start layering on additional professional levels that elevate your improv to the next level. It's literally a game bump, right? It's like you level up your improv, okay? It's not magical. It doesn't happen by magic, right? Which a lot of us thinks. It doesn't just happen by chance, by luck. It's because we're adding in addition to what we've learned. We're taking these concepts and adding in other concepts, which all blend together to create this final product. Now, you need to work on each and every concept, right? And I started to add in other concepts like reharms, blues scales, improvisation tools, half whole, right? Other rhythmic contrasting elements like triplets, ornamental trills. All those things need to be separated, isolated, and worked on so that they can come out and you're playing in a spontaneous manner. But when you do that, this is what starts to happen, right? But just transcribing and trying to get all that under your fingers just by the act of transcribing is not systematic and organized enough to allow you to spontaneously express freedom with all the elements, right? It needs to be tackled in a structured and organized manner in order to unlock the potential of these elements. Again, each and every element needs to be so like riding a bike, so on the back of your hand that they come out fluidly and smoothly. But just work on this. Just work on the whole first part of this episode. I was going to my old roots of jumping to that chord tone of the F, which you can do. Right? So that's like, again, it's the transition into the next chord. So you can kind of jump ahead of the chord tones. I was trying to demonstrate in a simple manner. I failed. Right? So you can do here. Again, use your radar technique. Start to use the bebop approaches. Go at 50. Super duper slow until you can start to string these things together. There's no point in going fast. Don't even use your left hand, right? Just use your right hand. Just start to go really, really slow. Put a track on. That line there. All right, so you get the picture. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Hopefully you're able to see the conceptual layers that start to add on to actually elevate your improvisational sound. And as always, have a fantastic day, and I'll talk to you guys later.